Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the technology.ie podcast, episode 48 for November 1st, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Trick or treat, Michaela. Are you there?
I'm just trying to think, how can I react to that without going bah humbug or something?
Are they hammering on your door all evening there in Carlottown?
No, actually, they're not, thankfully. Now, there was a bit of ruckus earlier, but it's mainly been fireworks, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've been working late this evening. Just got in the door to record the podcast this evening, and my kids and wife arrived in the door about 5 minutes after me because they've been out trick-or-treating all evening and visiting their cousins and things like that. And they're full of sweets and sugar and excitement. So if you hear people kicking the doors down or marching around very loudly outside as they try and get ready for bed, Michaela, you'll know the reason why. So we may have some interruptions tonight. It's Halloween night and hopefully it'll be a peaceful night. And you and I are sitting down for our weekly chat about technology. How are things in Carlow and with Black Knight?
I think my staff are all suffering from a sugar overload since we had today. We had the Black Knight Bake Off.
Tell me about that. What's that about?
One of the guys, Gianni, decided a few weeks back that it would be a good idea to have a Bake Off because, well, I don't know, he thought it would be a good idea.
And for Halloween as well.
Okay. So a load of our... So, like, some of our programmers, our technical support staff, account staff, sales staff, they all went off and made cakes and brought them in today. And there was a competition to see who had the best cake. And at one point, it was just thought that myself and Paul would be the judges, which meant we had to taste all these damn things. And which, I mean, you know, under other circumstances, you know, the idea of having to being forced to taste cakes isn't such a bad idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're faced with like 10 ridiculously, completely over the top in terms of, you know, calories, levels of chocolate, sugar, cream and everything else at like, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, you're just going, oh, God, I can feel the diabetes coming on already. And it was good fun.
So who are the best bakers? Is it the engineers? Is it the salespeople? Is it, you know, how does it break down?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, discovered that, you know, it was nothing like that. I mean, you know, some people who really did a fantastic job. I mean, one of the girls actually did hers, branded hers. So there was a Black Knight logo on the top of the cake. Another one had done all sorts of intricate stuff with kind of spider webs and blood and God knows what else going through it. I mean, obviously the blood was fruit of some kind. Another one, the one which actually won, I described it as heart attack on a plate because it was, you know, this kind of death by chocolate type things you find in restaurants. It was something like that taken to the nth degree. It was the most incredible looking thing I've ever seen. I was just looking at this going, oh my God, that's a coronary. I mean, other people had done things like one of them had done a kind of an apple kind of bread type cake type thing. I mean, which was much lighter, but very, very tasty. It was good fun though. I mean, I think, you know, it was one of those kind of fun, silly things that we do from time to time.
Good for you. Good for you. Good team building kind of thing. How many of you are working there in Black Knight now, Michaela?
There's nearly 30 of them total.
Wow. Well, it's no harm to have a bit of fun for Halloween, and fair play to you. I was just looking at some of the news this week. This first story I want to talk about this week caught my attention. It's Tim Cook and Apple, and the news that was announced during the week that two executives are being let go. And in particular, Scott Forstall, who has been the guy in charge of iOS and has been the person really criticised, I think, for the failure of some of their recent things, such as the maps, and in particular the maps in particular in Siri as well. And we talked about this a while back, Michele, and I made much of the fact that Apple issued an apology, but it's emerged in the news this week that, in fact, Scott Forstall refused to sign the apology. Tim Cook had to sign him itself, and it seems that sometime after that, he's called Scott Forstall into the office and got him to stand over the trapdoor.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, this is something that I've seen several people talk about over the last few days. I mean, but not so much in relation to what led to this.
Yeah.
Or to do with the replacements. So, but yeah, this I actually had missed this entire thing. I mean, well, nice catch. So it was on the verge there. Forstall refused to sign the apology.
That's right, yeah. I'm just looking. I had it open here just a few minutes ago, and I'm not even sure what I've done with it. But
yeah, I'm just reading this here. Like, Forstall argued that the company could forego an apology, like when the previous generation of iPhones shipped with faulty antennas. I mean, it's you know, you see this. I mean, there's changes in some of these companies, and you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say too much about it because I mean, look, you know,
but it is an interesting one. It's a year since the death of Steve Jobs. It's more than a year indeed since Tim Cook took over, and it seems that Forstall in particular was someone who was noted as being a particular favourite of Steve Jobs. That article in The Verge that I've linked to, and we'll put it in the notes as well, goes on to explain that indeed a lot of senior executives at Apple, including Johnny Ive, the designer, the guy who's credited with so much of the user interface and product design success of Apple's products over the last few years, found Forstall difficult to work with. And indeed, in recent months, this is all allegation and conjecture. Well, not exactly. I presume there's some basis behind it, but there are reports in the media that some of them found Forstall so difficult to work with that, in fact, they wouldn't meet him unless Tim Cook was present. I don't know, for some reason, I just thought, you know, we've heard of Tim Cook coming in here and taking over. We know about his supply chain expertise and his success in those areas with Apple. But it looks like he has a bit of badass as well about him. And of course, what it reminded me of, you'll have to forgive me if I just play a little clip here from a movie, which you may recognise, Michele.
Lord Vader, the fleet has moved out of light speed and we're preparing to...
You have failed me for the last time, Admiral. Captain Piet.
Yes, my lord.
Make ready to land our troops beyond their energy field and deploy the fleet so that nothing gets off the system. You are in command now, Admiral Piet.
Thank you, Lord Vader.
Speaking of Star Wars...
Yes.
Go on. It's exciting news this week, isn't it? I tweeted during the week. I retweeted, actually. I think was one of the best comments on it was one that said, Disney buys Lucasfilm for $4 billion. George Lucas has become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. that's one way to look at it. He's retiring, it seems, which seems to be a good thing for the franchise.
Well, I don't think he's retiring entirely. I mean, I thought he wanted to go off and do other things or something. I don't think he's actually going to hang up his... I don't know, what do directors hang up there?
Well, if he does other things besides try to direct a Star Wars movie, I think a lot of Star Wars fans would say, yes, that's very good. Thank you for coming up with the whole concept and story and idea behind all this. But no thank you to Jar Jar Binks and some of the other innovations that have been introduced in the last three movies.
Well, this is one of the things. I mean, it's like the reaction. I posted up on technology.ie earlier this evening with some of the web reactions to the sale, and they're hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are absolutely hilarious. And I only collected a few of them. There's so many more of them floating around.
I made the mistake the other night of telling the news to my 8-year-old son before he went to sleep, and that was it. There was no hope of him going to sleep for at least another hour after that, and he came out several times to discuss what the possible direction that a Star Wars Episode 7 could go in. Very excited about it in this house, I can tell you.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, some people I think are excited by the possibility of new Star Wars movies. Others are scared to death because... Yeah. They're looking at it in terms of, you know, Disney taking over this franchise. I just saw a Facebook update from somebody there. Travesty. George Lucas is dead to me now.
But I think
the last 24 hours, Facebook and Twitter have just been full of this.
Yeah.
I mean, the hurricane is gone. You know, that's it. And nobody cares. It's now, oh my God, Disney has bought Star Wars.
But if you think of the kind of company Disney is and the kind of resources it has to easily absorb Lucasfilm, if you like, which includes more than just the movies and that. It includes, of course, Industrial Light and Magic, and it includes other elements, I think, as well. LucasArts, I think, as well. The whole idea that... And if you think of the sheer scale and resources of Disney, this may well be the kind of company that can bring a sort of creative, I think, push forward on this. And some Disney movies, you know, they've done quite well. People have talked about that article. One of the articles we're linking to there in Slate magazine, for example, is talking about the success of recent Disney. Disney has acquired the Muppets, has acquired the Avengers and the Marvel Comics movies, done quite well with those creatively and critically and commercially, of course, as well. And people are saying this might not be a bad thing. Personally, I don't think anyone could do a worse job than Lucas has been doing with the Star Wars franchise. And I think a lot of people would be interested to see if further movies could be made and made well.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, Disney. Yeah, I mean, they've got the resources. They've had some fun. They've done some fantastic stuff. Avengers was brilliant. Was amazing. But then you've got other films where, like, you know, Dead on Arrival, like John Carter, which could have been fantastic, but just failed miserably. And it's a gem of a film in some respects, but I think they marketed it really badly. I mean, the title alone. The title just wasn't going to kind of captivate people. I mean, I hate films with the names of people as titles anyway. I mean, you know, they just don't seem to work. Mm. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But as you say, yeah, I mean, for a lot of Star Wars fans, the last couple of Lucas outings haven't exactly been stellar. So, you know, Disney can't make a bad situation much worse than it already is.
And as you pointed out, in the meantime, we can have fun with all kinds of mashups that are possible. We'll link to some of those as well. The whole notion, I suppose, of the crossovers from other characters in the Disney stable, which of course would be absolute death to, for example, introduce anything like that. But people are having fun with it in mashups at the moment, and there are the classic Disney cartoon characters like Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck showing up in Stormtrooper uniforms and things like that as well. I'm sure you've seen other examples as well out there as well, but any of the better ones, leave them in a comment to us on technology.ie. We'd very much enjoy a smile and a giggle at some of those. Let's move on, Michele. Sick of politics or babies clogging up your stream? You say there's a way to address that.
Well, yeah, this is, you know, if you're using Twitter or Facebook, I mean, I'd be perfectly honest, I was looking for a way to remove Halloween from my stream earlier this evening. I got so tired of all these bloody updates. With every single Facebook brand page wishing its followers happy Halloween. There's a couple of plugins that have been produced. And what they'll do, the one I was playing around with earlier, it removes all references to politics. So what you do, it only at the moment it's only available for the Chrome web browser. You install it, and then it gives you a load of keyword options. So it's, as it's an American thing, you know, Obama, Romney, Republican, Democrat, all those kind of things. But this, you can edit the list. So you could throw in, you know, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Enda Kenny, all that kind of thing. And then what it will do is it will replace all those references on Facebook or on Twitter with pictures of cats. Or something else. I mean, you can choose if you want to have...
Good. Because I'm sure there are some people who would be in the market to filter out the cats and cute pictures and things like that out of their stream. It's called unpolitic.me. And you mentioned that there's, speaking of cuteness, you can filter out, for example, all references to babies. That's another extension, is it?
Yes, another one. Yeah. That one's also available for Firefox. So if you know, if you've got your friends who insist on posting every single possible picture of their baby on Facebook, you can magically make them all disappear.
You could also just unfriend those friends, but I suppose you don't want to do that either. So it's
yeah. You know, I think you know this. You know, you've got close friends who you know in real life you love to death, but you know on social networks they might go a little bit over the top with the entire kind of you know
baby pictures or.
Yeah, well, here, you know, here's what my baby did 5 minutes ago. Here's what my baby did, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And look, you know, it's one of those things, but it's a bit of fun.
It is. The thing is that, you know, and it is a bit of fun. I don't imagine this is going to become a serious money spinner for the people who've come up with it, but I could be very wrong there. I seem to recall there was some years back, somebody came out with a Firefox extension for filtering out in, for example, a group blog, and I think this one in particular was Boing Boing. Somebody came out with a Firefox extension which particularly, I think, filtered out all of the posts by one of the four or five writers on Boing Boing. It was just a personal preference that this person had. But we've seen this kind of thing before, and it's interesting. Certainly, you can find out more about it on the website this week, on technology.ie. What else? I liked this one you blogged about Joss Whedon endorsing Romney. Let's have a listen to this, actually, Michele, because. I'm going to play this as well because I thought, you know, we could talk about it, but I think he says it very, very well indeed. Of course, Joss Whedon, the creator of Buffy, Firefly, Serenity, and most recently The Avengers. Let's have a listen to this.
You know, like a lot of liberal Americans, I was excited when Barack Obama took office 4 years ago, but it's a very different world now. And Mitt Romney is a very different candidate. One with the vision and determination to cut through business-as-usual politics and finally put this country back on the path to the zombie apocalypse. Romney's ready to make the deep rollbacks in healthcare, education, social services, reproductive rights that will guarantee poverty, unemployment, overpopulation, disease, rioting, all crucial elements in creating a nightmare zombie wasteland. But it's his commitment to ungoverned corporate privilege that will nosedive this economy into true insolvency and chaos. The kind of chaos you can't buy back. Money is only so much paper to the undead. The 1% will no longer be the very rich. It'll be the very fast. Anyone who can run, fight, make explosives out of household objects, or especially do parkour of any kind, you'll want to stick with them. Unless they read Ayn Rand. I don't pretend to see the future. No one knows for sure if they'll be the super-fast 28 days later zombies or the old-school shambling kind, but they'll be out there, and they'll need brains. So, whether you're a small businessman just trying to keep his doors open, a single mom so concerned for her son's welfare that she'll run to embrace him when he's clearly infected and going to bite her, or a strung-out ex-military type who's been out there too long and is taking the kind of damn fool chances that'll get us all killed, you need to ask yourself, am I ready? Am I ready for the purity and courage of Mitt Romney's apocalyptic vision? Mitt's ready. He's not afraid to face a ravening, grasping horde of subhumans, because that's how he sees poor people already. Let's all embrace the future. Stop pretending we care about each other. And start hoarding canned goods. Because if Mitt takes office, sooner or later, the Zomnies will come for all of us. Paid for by the committee to learn parkour like really soon, like maybe take a class or something.
That's Joss Whedon there on Mitt Romney. But as I say, you think, Michele, listening to most of that, you think he really is going to endorse the guy. And then you realise, well, no, it's early enough it comes in. But
The way he does it, it's so deadpan.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't smile. He doesn't kind of, you know, use the intonation or anything. It's just he gives across this deadpan kind of thing. You know, Romney is ready to make this. Romney's ready to do this. Romney will do that. And it's like,
he's got the vision and determination to cut through business as usual politics and finally put this country back on the path to the zombie apocalypse. And that's when you realise. But it is, yeah, it's deadpan all the way. And of course, I got to say, I don't know much about Joss Whedon. And I haven't, in fact, been a fan of his recent, some of his recent stuff. But I was a big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it was partly because of that kind of sharp dialogue and deadpan delivery and that really sort of funny, witty writing. And it's in here in this as well. Zomny. Romney.
Zomny.
He needs brains. And you like the disclaimer or the disclosure at the end about who paid for it.
Yeah, I just thought it was just, it's because it just kind of pulls it all in nicely together. I mean, it's funny.
Yeah.
I'd love to know how many views that video's had. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of these ones, they're not showing the, they're actually on this one. Mm. So I think a lot of our YouTube publishers aren't sharing their viewing stats. This has had like 4.5 million views now.
It's funny. Was there something funny, or was there something about the settings you used to embed that on technology.ie, Michele? Because I found I couldn't click through.
You know,
I couldn't click through to the YouTube version of it, which is something I like to do occasionally to go full screen in that. And I couldn't see those options on it. Was it some settings that you chose or something? Or
no. It's the way we're embedding the videos on there is using a WordPress plugin most of the time. And what it does is you get the URL to the original YouTube, and it magically creates the embedding code for you. So I don't actually go off and grab the embedding code from YouTube. I just let this plugin do it all for me.
Okay.
So there's nothing kind of funky. I've seen on some sites, must be something down to the template or, I don't know, some other little oddity. It sometimes doesn't work, but I mean, it plays fine.
Speaking of YouTube this week, and I know we didn't talk about this in advance, but I noticed a couple of videos going through this evening on YouTube, and they have pre-roll advertising in them for Google AdWords for video. That's a campaign. I don't know if you've seen those today, but I haven't seen it before today. I know that.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen those ones, but I mean, if you log into your YouTube account at the moment, I mean, this has been going on now for the last, I noticed a couple of months ago, you now have all these various options as if you're somebody who uploads videos, but you've got these options to monetize the video.
Yes.
So let me just have a look, actually.
They've been around for a while, though.
Yeah, I think they're trying to push harder.
But what they're pushing now is to target with AdWords for video, is to target people who want to advertise on videos.
Oh, sorry. So this is actually to get people to advertise as opposed to publishers.
That's what it seems to be. And again, I've only seen it on two or three videos that I looked at this evening. So probably need to find out a bit more about it. But it's a campaign that seems to be new. I haven't seen it before. But obviously...
Oh, okay. Sorry. No, that's just me being dumb then.
No.
My apologies.
No, and I didn't give you forewarning about it, so no worries. Listen, what have you got this week in Black Knight in terms of special offers, products and services that you want to promote?
Well, we're still doing that offer that we mentioned last week about on .it domain names. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. You can register a .it domain name using a special coupon code. You only pay €6.99 instead of the usual price. And if you want to transfer a .it domain name across, then you can.
Okay. All right. We'll put a link into that as well. The coupon code Bella Italia. All lowercase, no spaces. And if you want to know how to spell it, you'll find it in technology.ie or over on the blog at blog.blackknight.com. Because, of course, .it, Michele, is the Italian country code domain.
Yes.
Naturally enough. Let's move on. I liked this one you blogged during the week. iPhone protection takes on new meaning.
Yeah, this one, I can't remember where I came across it. I saw it somewhere else, obviously. I mean, it was one of those things. Somebody posted a link to it. This is just, you know, only in the US. I mean, it's so American. And yet at the same time, it's so appealing. It's an iPhone cover. And, you know, if you've got an iPhone or any other smartphone, you probably want to get a cover for it. So when you drop it, because you will drop the damn thing, they don't bounce particularly well. So you get a cover to protect it. But this cover does more than that. It'll protect you. Because it's got a built-in mace gun or dispenser. I'm not even too sure what the correct word is. Do you use a gun dispenser? You know, in built into the back of it, it's got pepper spray.
Yeah. I'm not sure I think this is so cool. But again, I suppose, I'm not in a situation perhaps where I'm concerned about my safety on the streets. And I know a lot of people, and women in particular, perhaps are. So the idea is that you have your pepper spray, but it's integrated with your iPhone case? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, it's an iPhone case which carries a canister, which is removable because obviously you can't fly with it, a canister of pepper spray.
Yeah.
And you can, of course, buy spare canisters of pepper spray if you need to.
I suppose the idea is that you'd have it in your hand, perhaps, in very many cases, rather than go fumbling in. We very often have the phone under our hands if we're not... if we're not actually talking on the phone at a particular time, it's within easy reach for being answered. And I guess that's where you want your pepper spray to be as well, in easy reach in case of attack.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not going to want to have pepper spray or anything like that somewhere where you can't get at it, because that would be kind of pointless.
Yeah.
And, you know, pepper spray, uncomfortable and everything else, but it's not going to kill you. It's better than shooting somebody. I think there's definitely a market there for it.
Do you think any women listen to this podcast, Michele?
I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, that's a part of the problem here, isn't it? If there are any women out there and you listen to technology.ie, please do let us know what you think in relation to this. And again, it's not... It is, I suppose, something that's probably designed in pepper spray and that kind of defensive weapon, I suppose, is designed for use... by women, I think, in particular.
No, not entirely. I have to admit, Con, there was a time, at a particular time in my life, when I actually had a canister of pepper spray.
Really? Were you walking the mean streets somewhere, Michele?
I'm not going to go into the details, but let's say, if you're living in a very large city, there can be a certain degree of violence.
Yes.
So actually having it, at one stage I got quite paranoid and had a small little canister of it, which I used to carry around it myself.
Yeah.
I think I actually had gel. It wasn't the spray, because the thing with the spray is if the wind turns, it'll blow straight back into your face. Whereas with the gel, it projects us directly at whatever you're firing it at.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing is, Connick, if you live in a very big city, and I mean, let's say, actually even taking Dublin, you know, you walk through certain parts of Dublin late at night after the pubs have closed. It's not the most pleasant or welcoming kind of place to be.
No, I agree with you. I wonder though, are these kind of defensive this defensive equipment, such as pepper spray or gel or things like that, or tasers or what have you, are they in use much in Ireland? You hear about them in the States, certainly. And as you describe it, Michele, it sounds like common sense. Do you know anecdotally if pepper spray is used, for example, in Dublin?
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, I'm not even sure if it's legal over here.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. But again,
I mean, it's not like, you know, if you... I mean, this is... I honestly do not know if it's legal or not. I mean, it could be a case of it being completely illegal in over here. Certain things... If you remember back when we were kids... Do you remember the Black Widows?
No. What were they?
The Black Widow catapults.
Oh, I think I do, yeah. They were like a crossbow, was it?
No, it was a catapult.
Yeah?
It was a very, very powerful catapult that had, they were black. Mm. And it actually would lock onto your arm.
Right.
And, I mean, you must have seen them, Con. For God's sake, you're not that old.
No, I guess maybe the circles I moved in or whatever.
They were all the rage at one stage. Remember, as a teenager, loads of my friends had them.
Yeah.
And then the legislation changed.
And so they were made illegal.
They were made illegal. I think they're legal again.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing as like with crossbows. Like I remember when I was 12 or 13 years old, crossbows... were legal, and then they became illegal. They might be legal again now. I'm actually not too sure.
Yeah, no, I had one friend, all right, Michele, who was into crossbows and knives and samurai swords and things like that. You know, all perfectly fine and interesting, but I got to say it wasn't something that that I came across too much. But yeah. But I know that there was certainly an issue from time to time with certain things being, with the questionable legality in relation to some things versus others. So I'm not sure what the story is in relation to personal safety equipment, non-lethal type of weapons such as pepper spray and things like that and nowadays. But it's certainly interesting. And this idea it's interesting, all right, to see it integrated into an iPhone case. Again, I mean, I don't know. It says it comes with safety features so that you won't accidentally blind people when you're trying to make a call, which is nice, I think. Really?
Well, yeah, I think the integrity of blinding yourself or somebody else accidentally would be a good idea.
Not good. Sky are launching broadband and phone services in Ireland. I guess it was only a matter of time, Michele. Have they been offering these in other countries prior to now?
Oh, yeah, the UK. They've been offering it in the UK for the last couple of years. And it's seemingly it's quite popular over there. Now, the next question is, how much is it going to cost? What are they going to offer? When exactly is it going to launch? And to be honest with you, I'd love to be able to tell you. Mm. I just don't know, because they sent out a mailer to all their Sky customers last week saying, hey, we're launching this. But I mean, I've gone looking and I can't find any more information.
No, all they're doing is saying, yes, we're going to do this very soon. And they're inviting people to register their interest. It seems more like market research than anything else, really, at this early stage.
Well, I think from the mailer, which, of course, I've since thrown out, I think they said that they were planning on launching it before Christmas.
Right.
But I honestly... I honestly don't know. I mean, it's fun. I mean,
yeah,
fun to see a new entrant into the market.
It is, but I mean, at the end of the day, the technology and the wholesale, I suppose, backhaul and setup for providing all of this at the end, and sorry, in particular, in terms of delivering it to the last mile, you're talking about. I presume they're going to be doing this with. Buying Aircom's DSL or buying your telephone line or something like that. It's going to be there's not really going to be new technology involved here. They're just going to be another provider, another competitor in the market. Similar, I suppose, to what UPC and others are doing as well already.
Well, no, UPC has its own network.
Oh, does it?
Oh, God, yeah. No, UPC has its own network. I mean, I've got UPC here at home, and it's fiber direct into the home.
Okay.
Now, I mean, a lot of the, you've got a couple of companies that have their own networks, and then you've got a lot of other companies that are basically buying capacity off one of the others.
Yeah.
So whether I would assume, I mean, I don't know for sure. But I would assume that you're right in that Sky will be piggybacking on Aircom or one of the others, that they'll buy capacity from them and then they'll resell it.
Yeah.
there are a couple of companies that actually do have their own network set up. Mm. So, it'll be interesting. I mean, the thing with any of these things is. Competition is always good. I mean, the DSL market has been very, very, very competitive over the last few years. Companies like UPC have really shaken things up by offering, I think it's like 100 megs down in some areas, which is damn fast. I'm trying to think of, at what point would you need more than 100 megs?
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest with you...
There is the one.
Well, I'm racking my brain here, Colin. I really am.
At this stage, yeah. Yeah.
100 megs is pretty much everything you could possibly want.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Sky and, I suppose, everything I could possibly want and stuff like that, I finally got got the digital TV working here. As I think I was saying to you, I was going to recycle the an old, not so much an old PC, in fact, a perfectly good media PC from the office, which I have now actually installed in the sitting room. And guess what? It's not as noisy or as intrusive as my wife had feared. And it may well just end up being our digital TV and our media centre and our digital video recorder and all of that as well. I think I was saying to you before that I had... it was running Windows Vista, and I had an installation of Windows 7 ready to put on it, but I hadn't got around to doing that. And the difference with the Media Centre that's built into Windows Vista is that it doesn't support H.264, the Serview standard. It did support the UK Serview standard, the MPEG-2. So got that working over the weekend, 3 or 4 days late for the digital switchover, but the kids hardly noticed, to be quite honest with you. We kept them sort of distracted for a few days, and I'm pretty happy with it now, I have to say. And the other thing as well is that it is using the, you know, obviously I have a, you know, it has internet connectivity as well, and I got installed, you know, we can run Netflix, I think I've been telling you about, I'm pretty happy with using. And the only disadvantage is that I have to run Netflix from a browser. It'd be ideal. And I've been Googling this. Apparently, previous versions of Windows Media Center, which is what I want to use, because the PC came with a remote that run for Windows Media. And literally, you sit back on the couch, you press the button on the remote to launch Media Center, and you never have to get up then after that. Unless... that is that you want to run Netflix. Now, there was some kind of at which case I have to get up and get the mouse going. I'll have to get a wireless mouse, I suppose, and set it up on the coffee table in front of me. But it would be nice if that Netflix was integrated into Windows Media Center. And as far as I can gather, previous versions of Windows Media did have some kind of a plug-in or some kind of an extension for Netflix. But this current one doesn't seem to have it. So again, it's one of those things where you go Googling and nobody seems to know anything about it. And I guess just that the Netflix and the Windows guys aren't actually talking to each other. But now that I'm in this position where I'm sitting back in the couch and consuming maybe perhaps more Netflix movies than I have been using, and also looking at, for example, Channel 4 On Demand, watching episodes of programmes on that as well, because we don't have satellite, so we only have the terrestrial Irish channels at the moment. I'm beginning to think about my bandwidth caps, Michele, as a result of that. And luckily I was on Terracom the other day because, as you know, I'm scaling down the office part of the business that I have running here at home. And one of the things I'm doing is getting rid of two ISD or a pair of ISDN lines, which I had installed for usually for connectivity with other broadcasting studios, radio studios and recording studios anywhere in the world. It is legacy technology, I know, but it's one that's been used extensively and still is in use very much by audio production studios. And I discovered that in doing so, I'll be switching back to one basic phone line, one basic broadband on that, an analog phone line with broadband, getting rid of the two digital lines and moving actually to a new calls package, which is going to include unlimited broadband as opposed to capped broadband, which is what I have at the moment. So in doing so, getting rid of two ISDN lines, removing the cap on my broadband, and I'm going to be saving roughly €70 a month on that as well. So I'm rather pleased.
Well, I mean, the thing is now, Colin, I mean, it is possible to do that. I mean, a couple of years ago, it just wasn't possible. You know, you couldn't get these, you know, uncapped connections with decent allowances were something that was completely unheard of. I mean, sure, if you had a business line, grand. But if you were using a kind of a normal domestic one, no.
Something they're seeing in the States, I know, that we're not seeing here is that certain, or at least maybe we are now, you may know more about this than I do, Michele, but certain services are partnering with the ISPs and the bandwidth provider, you know, yeah, with the ISPs to say, if you use this service, then... it won't count towards your minutes or won't count, towards your data allowance. And so, for example, I think Netflix in the States is partnered with one or other of the carriers in a similar situation like that. Are you familiar with anything like that here in Ireland at the moment? Or
I don't think we're quite at that stage. I mean, if you look at what's going on INEX, let me see if I can actually bring that up now whilst I'm talking to you. The INEX, which is the Irish Internet Neutral Exchange, which is where, you know, you get ISPs, hosting providers, and content providers swapping traffic directly. So it brings down the costs for all parties involved. And if you look there's 56 members now, and some of them have open policies and others have selective policies. Now, an open policy means they will peer with anybody. So that means they'll swap traffic with pretty much any other member, everybody's happy. You know, it's this wonderful kind of happy place. So let's say we peer directly with a load of them. So it means the traffic goes really, really quickly across there. And I'm looking at it, Netflix, for example, I'm not sure if we're peering with them or not, but I would assume that most of the ISPs are peering with them because it's going to cost them less money. Now, whether they're able to pass on that saving in inverted commas onto their users or not, I don't know. Hmm. But, you know, there's the time, I think, of the kind of crazy amounts of money per month for a broadband connection. I think they're more or less gone, but not. But we're still having problems with mobiles, dude. We're still having problems there.
That is true as well, and my mobile bill is something I'm kind of concerned about at the moment.
You pasted another link there, Con. Was it something about cell phone networks and Hurricane Sandy? What was that?
Very interesting. Again, this is an article on Slate magazine this week. The biggest surprise of Hurricane Sandy, how well the cell phone networks worked. Now, I heard about this myself. One of the people who's involved with the radio station where I work at the moment was telling me the other day. He has three sons living in New York, and he was in touch with all of them over the course of the night before last, when Hurricane Sandy was at its worst on Monday night in the United States. They were all safely indoors, keeping out of the weather as advised, and the power went out for most of them, and yet they were still able to talk to their dad in County Clare on Skype, thanks to the fact that they were using cell phone networks. Now, this article I'm referring to here in Slate, and we link to it as well on technology.ie, points out that this has not always been the case, and that very often the cell phone networks, the mobile networks, have been the first to go down rather than being the last to go down. And in particular, the two most recent significant disasters in the United States being Hurricane Katrina, I think, in Louisiana in 2005, and of course September 11th in 2001. In those cases, the cell networks went down, the mobile networks went down, and that was that. Once the power went out, and it is a question of power in most cases, because if power to the cell towers goes down, then your cell network has gone down. But this is something, and it seems to have been a real success story in relation to this. This is something which has been successful because networks have invested in the kind of resilience, in the kind of backup power and redundancy that is needed to face a disaster like this. So much so that it really has become one of the success stories of all of this, and in particular on this occasion, the New York City Mayor's office were advising people over Twitter, and so many people still had their data connectivity through Twitter, to report a non-emergency fallen trees this morning, text 311692. Don't tie up 911 phone lines unless you have a life-threatening emergency. And again, that's really common sense. It's wonderful that these kind of mobile data networks, which is essentially what SMS is, and of course mobile data connectivity as well, can be used in this way. And you know, seems to have been a real success story on this occasion.
Well, I mean, the thing was kind of interesting was the way, I mean, not just cell phone networks. I mean, obviously that was what was powering a lot of this, but it was the way that a lot of the responders resorted to using Twitter and other social networks to, you know, get messages out, to communicate with people in affected areas. You know, I think it was Google had, I presume you saw that, the kind of disaster map thing.
I didn't.
Well, they had an entire an entire kind of how would I describe it? It was a special kind of, you know, information, up-to-date information using Google Maps technology, pulling in information from all the available resources so people could track and see what was going on. And they've got an entire kind of emergency responder type setup there. And, you know, several of the New York City and other affected area, their official government things was, you know, follow this particular Twitter account. And as you say, you know, don't tie up the phone lines. Use these things for communicating instead. You know, it's been interesting to see how that side of things has worked. Very interesting.
Makes a huge amount of sense, without a doubt. I'm going to skip ahead to the last story because it's kind of related in relation to news organisations and covering the news and mobile data and things like this. I've linked to a story on Silicon Republic, RTE to include live smartphone feeds in news bulletins. What do you think of this?
Well, yeah, I suppose the quality is there now, isn't it?
It is. It is. I noticed even watching in relation to Hurricane Sandy, I noticed a lot of Skype feeds and Skype video being used in terms of interviewing people in New York from, let's say, from Sky in London and that. And it makes sense if, you know, we're getting, I think, more. And indeed, I think it's Damian Mulley had told me before that he's done interviews for Morning Ireland now and been encouraged to do them over Skype.
Well, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, Con. I mean, you know, the thing is, if you think about it, you know, a few years back, you really are dying down there, aren't you?
I am a bit of a cough this evening.
Try not to expire while we're still recording. I mean, or at least send me the raw data. You know, a few years back, you know, the roving reporters on, you know, at the war front or whatever would have been using satellite phones. You know, the technology's moved on. You know, they're still doing that, but I mean, if you can do it using Skype, or if you can do it using some other kind of VoIP or, you know, streaming video or whatever, sure, why not?
Yeah, I'm just curious as to how this will. They say they're going to include a rollout of smartphones with the capacity to feed directly into news bulletins and plan to link up with a wireless network in Dublin, which will enable journalists to report live from anywhere in the city. It doesn't seem to be anything too earth-shattering, really, in a way. The other interesting thing in that article in Silicon Republic is the revelation by the managing director of RTE that 60% of all the station's online content is consumed via mobile devices. Not surprising, Michele.
Not in the least bit surprising at all. I mean, I've got friends and I can see from their updates on Facebook and elsewhere, it's all over mobile.
Yeah.
I mean, they might have a laptop or even a desktop, but it's most of their interactions are over mobile. Yeah. I mean, whilst I'm talking to you, let me just double check the stats for technology.ie. At the moment, let's see, what do we have? We have about a quarter of all visitors, I think, seem to be mobile, based on what I'm looking at here.
That's not surprising. The other thing that's in that article as well is the announcement that they're going to sort of invest a little bit more in the digital RT Digital News Now channel as well, which I think a lot of people are probably seeing for the first time now that they've made the digital switch over. It's one of the terrestrial Serviu channels that are available. I had followed it, speaking of mobile, I had been following it indeed on the iPhone and on Android as well, because I have the app for that. But it's something I find myself doing in the morning now, is switching over to not listen to Morning Ireland, but watch it from those studio webcams. Have you ever looked in on that?
No, because what I tend to do in the morning is I turn on... I have the radio inside in the bedroom, which, you know, it's a web enabled wireless Wi-Fi. It's got all the crazy digital stuff enabled. I'm not even sure if I'm listening to FM these days or if I'm listening to the DAB stream. I actually don't know. So I've got that on, and then I will make myself coffee, and I'll have Morning Ireland on audio only, streaming from my desktop, whilst I'm drinking coffee and you know, reading, doing a few emails and things like that before I head into the office. So no, I wouldn't actually sit down and watch it.
No, there isn't really anything to look at, and mostly it's a view of bowed heads and people peering into monitors and talking into mics and that. But I do notice, because I've been following this for a while, that the general standard of dress on the programme by both presenters and guests has gone up since the early days of when I think that webcam was probably catching people by surprise. So some of us who have faces and dress sense for radio are sympathetic, I think, with the presenters on Morning Ireland. Not that they're not elegant people in themselves. I was watching Anya Lawler and that girl, what's her name? Oh, I know her. She's from Clare. But Rachel English presented that programme there this morning. Finally, Michele, and it's not it's last but not least this morning, and it is very serious and very important. I don't know if you were, obviously you've been aware of the news in recent weeks of tragic suicides which have been linked with bullying in particular, and cyberbullying indeed as well in many cases as well, including the recent tragedy in County Donegal on Saturday. And this, I suppose, coincided with the announcement, but the very timely announcement of some guidelines and advice in relation to how to combat and deal with cyberbullying from the youth organisation Spun Out, which isn't an organisation I've had a lot of dealings with, Michele. I'm not in their target demographic, without a shadow of a doubt, but I know that they've been very active in terms of youth affairs and dealing with young people online. They're active on Twitter and Facebook and on a website and all of that as well. And I thought they put out some pretty... really pretty common sense and down-to-earth advice in relation to dealing with cyberbullying there on Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, it makes sense. I mean, the thing with a lot of the cyberbullying, from my understanding of it, and again, I'm not really in the demographic. I mean, for me, as an adult, I'm more likely to be trolled than I am to be bullied, I think.
Well, it's a special case of trolling in a way, isn't it? And I was interviewed on radio during the week in relation to this as well. And we've, you and I have talked a lot about don't feed the trolls and things like that on the programme. But there is would you say, I don't know, there's a special case, I think, especially when it comes to young people and teenagers, that they may not have developed the hard neck that you need to deal with trolls, and that in particular there's a particularly vindictive personal form of abuse that that they find themselves encountering.
Well, I mean, this is it. I mean, if you look at the advice they're giving, I mean, it's all about not reacting, not getting pulled into it, but also, I think this is the same for any kind of issue, be it cyberbullying or just any kind of abuse, save the evidence.
Absolutely, yeah. And this was something that was, I think, news to a lot of people this week, was maybe your average user of the internet might not be aware of how to take a screenshot or a screen grab. And this was something that Spun Out wanted to spread the awareness of and say to people. Because very often, Michele, these abusers, these bullies online, these trolls, can delete the evidence and if they post a nasty comment, delete it again once they know that it's done its work.
Yeah, and that is an unfortunate reality. I mean, it's like with some of these things I see where somebody will post a reply on a forum or something. You might get the email notification, and then when you go to look at it, they've either removed it completely or edited drastically. Hmm. So, the evidence of what they actually said, even though you've seen it, it's gone.
That's just it.
And the thing with anything electronic, I mean, the collecting the evidence, it's not easy. I mean, there's if you talk to law enforcement, and I mean, it's something that I've been threatening to get a guy I know who works with Interpol to come on as a guest at some point, and there are some of the stories he'd tell you now would scare the hell out of you. But there's an entire process that you should really follow if you're collecting evidence of any kind of issue.
So would you say this? Would you say this?
You have to make sure that the evidence you have is. Beg your pardon?
So would you say that this process that they've outlined on spunout.ie is pretty close to what's required? So they're saying don't reply to the messages, save the evidence, tell a trusted adult. They're recommending you can contact a free confidential support service such as the Samaritans. Report the bullying to the police or Gardaí. Report the bullying to the technology providers such as the mobile company. And there's also further links to staying safe online. It seems pretty comprehensive.
It is. I think it's a good start, because I think one of the problems with a lot of this kind of a lot of this internet related issues that we're seeing more and more of is, I think there's still there is still this kind of view from some people, it's the internet, it means it's somehow different, and sure it is in many respects, but at the same time it isn't.
It's not different. It's still bullying, and it's no less terrible in its consequences, indeed, in some cases as well. But I know what you're saying, and certainly in relation to, this was something that's been highlighted or was discussed, I think, on several media during the week, was that parents may not know what's going on, may not know how young people are interacting online, and it's important for them to be aware of that.
Yeah. And that's basically what it sums it up. I mean, the thing is, it's not a case of getting really, really fear, this kind of situation like, oh, it's the internet, I don't understand us. Mm. Oh, I'm going to go off and run and cry to the local politician. Mm. And then you end up in a situation where the politicians are being bombarded by these worried parents, and the parents don't know what's going on. The politician is confused, and he or she doesn't know what's going on. And next thing you get, all sorts of crazy legislation being passed, and we all end up suffering.
I'm not sure. I think we've had the internet around so long. I think certainly parents may not be aware of it, but I think they do know what the importance of the internet and social media and technology is, and they see it in if not in work, then in social spheres. And I mean, even Michele, the thing I've often remarked on how mobile technology in particular initially, but also increasingly social media, is being used to shore up and support community activity, local clubs, sports organisations, parents' associations, all kinds of things like that. So, I wouldn't be quite so worried that people would say, quick, let's bring in emergency legislation to turn off the internet. But I do think that there is an understanding by parents nowadays. And I guess I'm coming into it myself, and my eldest is 8 now. But I know I've been talking to people whose parents or whose kids are slightly older, and I know what's ahead of me and down the line. It's about really being involved. It's about knowing what your kids are doing. It's about taking the time and effort really to understand modern technology and the internet and social media, because this is the world your kids are living in, and this is the world your kids have got to operate and compete in and work in and live in. And there's no point in sticking your head in the sand about it. Simple as that, really.
Well, yeah, this is it. I mean, it's Colin, we have to find something a bit more upbeat to end the show on. Seriously, I can't have this.
We do. I have beer here, Michele.
Look, I've got something. Hold on, I'm gonna send you a link to this. Have a look at cheaptakedowns.com.
Let me just see now and bring it up here. Cheaptakedowns.com.
Hello, Colin.
Yes, can you hear me? We're suffering from a bit of a time lag, I think, this evening.
So cheaptakedowns.com, for violations so obvious that even our cats can decide.
We at Cheap Takedowns are here to help you quickly execute uniform rapid suspension, URS, actions. See our sister site, fasttakedowns.com. Here's how it works. File a complaint with our handy fill-in. Who are you complaining to? What are you complaining about? Is this Digital Millennium Copyright Act takedowns?
No. It's a wind-up. No, it's run by a guy I know. If you have a click on the About Our Takedown Cats and see if you recognise the feline.
Oh, is that Squishy the cat?
Well, it's Squishy. Squishy is now all over that website.
Squishy the cat, the Black Knight mascot. Yes, there he is indeed. Listen, Michele, I'm going to let you go, and we'll wrap this podcast up and ship it out and get it out in the morning to listeners on technology.ie. And don't forget, listeners, if you have comments, suggestions, ideas, or just want to vent or bitch, do get in touch with us. That's it for this week. From myself, Conor Muinicoin.
And me, Michele Galen.
Until next week, slán go fóid.
Slán.